Okay, so I have to...
take us off YouTube.
So when you go... So it needs to keep playing that after you move. The reason it did that is because you, when you switch cards, the segment grid changes.
Yep.
So
the player should be independent of anything else. So you just send to the player to play and then it'll play regardless of what the UI does.
All right, YouTube, we're going.
Goodbye, YouTube.
Goodbye, YouTube.
Yeah. So, I'm going to stop the recording up in the Qcast thing. So I wanted to, talk about my new job. Are we off YouTube?
We are off YouTube. Would you be able to do the after show in the thing?
What do you mean after show in the
thing? In Qcast?
Oh. I mean, if we created it as a separate podcast, I just left him over on potential topics, which is what I was going to talk about on the after show. So on the Kanban board, I was just going to talk about my new job.
No, but I'm saying, can you just go to QCAT?
Oh, I see. You want to do the video thing.
Yeah.
Over there. All right. This will be fun.
Just to see if it works.
All right. I'm going to hang up on Zoom.
Don't pin it though.
Did you stop the Zoom recording?
It'll stop, but no.
Recording stopped.
Okay. Stopped.
All right. I will go over there. Goodbye.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Chat room. It's just you and me now. 50-50 if this is going to work. Well, it found the camera. That's good. God, he loves to shove things down at the bottom of the screen. Let's see. Chat to Blackmagic. Chat to continue to join.
Hopefully he shows that you show up.
Who are you talking to?
You.
No, I mean, who are you talking to when you said hopefully he'll show up?
I don't know. Nobody.
I mean, you're on Pride 48. You're controlling that stream.
Oh, the only thing is you're small because I didn't unpin you. And so you're small. You're kind of small.
I am. I'm a very small person. That's okay.
Well, I just wanted to see if it works for an extended period of time. So you wanted to talk about your job.
I do. I want to talk about my job.
Oh, and you see, it'll do a transcript.
Oh, nice.
But don't do that because it's 1 cent a minute.
Oh. Okay.
So I only want to do that for when we're actually recording a show.
Yeah. So new job. I got. So we went to dinner on Monday night over at the cake bake shop. And it was supposed to be a celebration of Zach's cast anniversary. So it was his 2-year cast anniversary. So we went to the cake bake shop to celebrate that. We invited Rodan and Darwin and Taylor and Babalu. Everyone showed up. So 6 of us at the cake bake shop to celebrate Zach's 2-year anniversary. But at the same time, what had happened was that the company that I had been interviewing with had gotten back to me and said, like, oh, we want to do a close interview with you. I think I had talked about that on the last podcast. They wanted to do a close interview and they had sent me, like, they have a system where you basically go through and you tell them what over the next 2 weeks, what times you're available. And then they have stuff that's marked like their preferred times or whatever. And so, you know, if you can choose one of their preferred times, then that's probably when it's going to happen. Anyway, it's just one of those kind of a things where you just pick the time. So I just, you know, optimistically picked all the days. I got this on a Sunday. I didn't think they would schedule it for Monday, but they ended up scheduling it for Monday. So then it became a thing where I had to run the risk of being a little late to Zach's party because I was going to have this Zoom interview with them on Monday evening. So I had the Zoom interview with them on Monday evening and it was like, oh yeah, well your offer isn't quite ready yet. We're waiting on a couple of signatures on it. So, but the recruiter will call you and, give you the the stats on it. It shouldn't be long. We should have it finished here pretty quick, but it is, you know, in the works. And but I'm just wanted, you know, if you had any questions, whatever. So I was basically meeting with my new boss and you know, who I already interviewed with. Anyway, but the point is that, you know, so then I went to dinner and I was like, oh, well, you know, there is an offer, but I don't know what it is. Right. It's like, I haven't seen
it. Yeah. And we talked on Monday and you
told me that. You had texted me on Monday and you're just like going, hey, did you get an offer? I was like, well, there is an offer. I just don't know what it is yet. And, so during dinner, I got an email from the recruiter who was basically like, okay, well, I've still waiting on one signature, but I can, you know, I can give you a verbal, you know, the verbal information of the offer, at like 8:30 tonight, if you have time to meet. And of course we're in a restaurant and stuff. And I'm like going, well, you know, at dinner, but yeah, I can make that work, but I'll be on my phone. I just wanted, you know, to warn you that it'll be Zoom on my phone. Cause I'm, you know, out. And, so he said, yeah, no problem. So, we go out and, so this is where it was really good to have Rodan there because, Rodan being the mighty executive that he is.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, so we do that too. The final signature on the offer, we hold off on it so that if the candidate wants to negotiate, then that last person can just make the snap judgment, either yes or no, we'll send it back. Right. So like if the candidate said, oh, I want 5% more or whatever, that third person, the last person to sign off on it has like the latitude to go like, you know, 5 or 10% or whatever and go like, oh yeah, okay, that's fine. And sign off on it. And, so that's normal for them not to have that. And I was, you know, telling, Rodan, it's like, I suck at negotiation. It's like, I know what the salary band is for this job and it starts a little bit higher than what I make now. And then it goes up from there. So I'm probably will take any offer. And so I'm hoping for, you know, the top end of the band and, but I'd be happy with the low end of the band because it's still more than I'm making now. And yeah. You know, I really like the company and stuff, but you know, I don't know what the other benefits are and stuff. So, you know, I go outside, we're still at the restaurant. I go outside to do my little Zoom call out in a quiet area, out on the patio there. And, so, you know, the advice I got from Rodan was, well, you know, don't react, just, you know, say, okay, I'll, you know, let me think about it. And, you know, let me, give me a day or so to think about it. So that way, you know, if they're really nervous, you know, they may increase the offer or something like that, but you don't have to, you know, you don't have to say yes right away. Just kind of don't.
Ooh, I don't think I could do that because I'm such a worry wart. I'm afraid that I'll be like, okay, I'll let you know. And then the next morning they'll find a better candidate
yeah,
or something. I'll be like, no, I want to sign it right now. Fax it to me.
And so I knew that there were, you know, I would probably, you know, say, hey, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would say, you know, at that point in time, it's not binding anyway. I haven't signed anything, but it's like, yeah, I would be, good with anything. But, so I got out there and I had in my head, like what the scenarios could be, but absolutely nothing prepared me for what they did, which was, they had reevaluated the role and decided that the upper band wasn't high enough and they raised the upper band of it. And then basically offered me the upper band section of it, which is significantly more than what I make now. And then on top of that, I have, equity that, vests 25% after the first year. And then like every quarter after that, it vests, up to a full maturity at 4 years. Right. So I get this, it's a big pile of stock as a bonus, as a signing bonus, but it essentially, so it's like $240,000 worth of stock is a signing bonus, but I don't actually get that money unless I stay there for 4 years. Right. So,
yeah, I just want to publicly state, I know I don't make money anymore, so I'm no longer, nobody can say I'm in the 1% anymore, but I just want to tell everyone that Daniel makes more than I used to make, or he will be making more than I used to make.
Oh, it's worse than that, Adam. It's worse than that. And this is what I wanted to talk about on my new job. So first of all, I'm super excited about the new job. Everyone I interviewed with was great. This is a great company. I'm super happy. I'm super excited to get going there. I kind of have an idea of some of their immediate pain points that I've you know already kind of figured out some solutions for that I think we could implement. So yeah, I'm super excited. And you know, they call my references. Yeah. So I had to wait for this written offer. And it was kind of one of those, you know, well, it'll be in a day or two. You know. And of course I didn't hear anything for a day or two. And one of my references the first day messaged me and was just like, oh, they scheduled an interview with me today. And I was like, oh, okay, great. And you know, thank you. And then afterwards she was just like, wow, they really want you. He's just like, you know, you know, it's like they really speak highly of you. And I was like, well, that's nice to know. And then on, you know, the next day I didn't hear anything and I was kind of just getting nervous, you know what I'm saying? Like, something's happened or whatever. So I texted my old boss who was the other reference that I'd given him. And I was just like, hey, have they talked to you yet? And then he like messaged back like about 10 minutes later. He's like, oh, I just got finished talking to them. And this was when I was grocery shopping. And by the time I got home, I had, you know, a message from the recruiter going, hey, good news. You're the final signature's there. They're just typing it up and everything. You'll have it in the morning, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And of course, good to their word, it did come in the next morning, which was, you know, everything there is, you know, everything they promised is there. It's very... very generous offer with a very generous equity and a very generous bonus, you know, thing. And I'm sitting there thinking about it and I'm just like, I've never had to deal with this. I've never had to deal with, you know, what they call RSUs, I think, right? Restricted stock units or something like that.
Restricted stock. Yeah.
Yeah, so
there's nothing much that you do with it. It just vests after a certain amount of time.
But when it vests, that's income, right? So in other words, like so if it vests like
yeah, but they report it.
No, I know they report it, but I still have to like if they don't do enough withholding on it, I'm still having to pay withholding on that and stuff. And I just want to be prepared for that. I want to make sure that I have things set up because it's a new thing. I don't know what I should do. Like, you know, do I immediately sell that and go put it in other stock that I, you know, I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket. I'm already getting my salary and my benefits from this place. I don't know that I want to, you know, tie my stock to them, but at the same time, they've been, recently had two great quarters and they're no longer in debt. And, they're listed on several lists as like the best, you know, one of the best stocks to buy right now. So it's like, you know,
This is a concern that I have because I have, so part of the savings that I've got, in fact, most of my savings is investments.
Yeah.
And for my former company, I got restricted stock units every quarter or every, you know, X times a year. And I was at the point because I had been with them for 15 years where I was vesting every quarter at four times a year. I was vesting.
Yeah. That's what that'll.
And
after my first year, that's what happens.
And so I've got a bunch of stock from my former company. Yeah. Now I've done a bunch of research and my company is seen to be a good stock to have at the moment.
Yeah, it is.
But I have over 50% of my savings is in this one company.
Yeah.
But I'm scared to sell it because I'm like, it could earn a whole lot this year, you know, or whatever. And if I sell it, I could miss out on all of that.
So you miss out, but you're not going to lose money. That's it. You've made money. So it's
well, like, when I sell, I have to pay taxes.
Yeah.
Because I've gained. So
I get it.
I have to pay capital gains taxes. So if I sell anything, I wish you could just switch your stock from one stock to another without having to pay. But you can't do that. You have to sell it. And then you have to pay taxes on any gains that you have. And then you buy the new stock. Now, I know there is some company now that you can do some weird thing where you borrow money on your stock value and then they put it in another stock for you or something. I don't know. It's weird. But so, yeah. So you don't know what to do. So
I'm just, so
I don't think you have to do anything much different than what you normally do.
I do because I am, you know, planning on retiring eventually. And so I do need to get all that stuff in line. I don't want to make the mistake of like, cause I literally, when you run all the numbers, I am making well over twice what I was making before. So, and that's the floor, right? So the floor of what I'm making in this new position is over twice what I was making before. What I don't want to do is just dump that extra money into the, you know, and then us get used to spending that money, right? Because we're very comfortable with what we have now. So what I'd like to do is just keep our household finances kind of at the level I'm at now, maybe a little more, but not a lot more. So not, you know, doesn't need to be any drastic change there. And then all the overage, basically fill out all the pieces that I'm missing in my retirement as far, you know, in retirement as well as my, like savings. Like you're supposed to have like 90 days buffer. I have, you know, maybe
6 months is what I would have.
Yeah. That's what they suggest. But it's like, so that's what I'm saying. So just like, you know, basically taking care of that. Like right now I have, you know, maybe 2 months worth of savings, right?
What I do is I just have everything go into savings accounts except for just what I need to pay my bills.
Yeah.
And then, and you know, just a little bit. So I would just, I do my finances using buckets, like accounts. Yeah. So I have an account for savings. I have an account for trips. I have an account for checking and I have an account for bills or something. I don't know. Anyway. And so I would always have money go directly to those accounts. And yeah, so I didn't even, and that like, helped me save a lot.
Yeah. But like Kathy Marshall is saying here, like there's a way, there are things you can do to tax, to maximize the tax savings and stuff. And so it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I will probably hire a CFP for a consult. Like I don't want to do a, you know, I don't want a financial planner forever, you know, that holds my hand every single day. I just want someone to sketch out a plan for me of what it is I need to do, to, you know, when these things happen, because it's not eventually, you know, I will not vest in those, you know, so I don't need to worry about that income or whatever for at least a year, right? It would be at least a year before I got that. But what I do have to deal with is, you know, a significantly higher paycheck and making sure that, you know, we don't, you know, you get a small raise and then you fold it into the fund and you just spend it. You know what I'm saying? Like you just kind of, now I can spend more, right? So I want to kind of hold the line for a little bit on, you know, let's hold this. Because we're not hurting for anything, right? You know, we have everything we need. We do plenty of stuff. It's like, it's, you know, so I feel like we don't need to suddenly start, you know, doing extravagant travels or extravagant things or whatever. It's like, let's just hold the line where we're at, which is very comfortable, very, very cool. Maybe give a little bit more to that. But the priority has to be to get my retirement stuff in. And I think the other reason I want to do the CFP is because I, you know, remember I inherited part of my dad's office. So I still own property, you know, commercial property, which I need to do something with. And there's several hundred thousand dollars there that is, you know, so it's one of those things that I kind of need to fold all of those into some kind of plan so that 5 to 7 years from now, when I do retire, I am not, you know, I'm set up to be good. So anyway, it's just crazy. And what I was talking about before the show, when I was talking about feeling guilty about this job is, you know, there are so many people right now that are looking for jobs and it just feels so surreal that, you know, they contacted me. I said, yeah, that sounds great. And then interview, you know what I'm saying? Like I didn't actually even look for the job. It found me. And it ended up.
So how did that work?
Great.
Are you just on LinkedIn and they found you on LinkedIn or
yeah,
what?
Yeah. So what happened is I was at a very low point at work and I was just like, you know, fuck it. I'm going to. So I reworked my resume and I was trying to get into my LinkedIn account and it was such an old account from such an old email. I had no idea how to get into it and I couldn't recover it because I didn't know what email address I used. So I essentially just created a new LinkedIn account and set it up and put my stuff in there. And the next morning, one of the messages I got was from a recruiter saying, you know, hey, you look like you'd be a perfect fit for this job of a senior AI enablement engineer. And, you know, would you be open to talking to me? And I'm like, oh, and so I did, you know, I did research on the company he was representing and, you know, him to see if, you know, see if any scam reports or whatever. And, you know, it all came out clean. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll talk to you. And, you know, ended up being a great interview. And he wanted to send me along to the engineering lead. And the engineering lead liked me, wanted to send me along to the tech people. Tech people liked me. They wanted to send me on to the other, you know, so it all kind of just worked out where it was like, it just clicked. And it was, you know, so it's like, I kind of feel guilty because so many other people are struggling. And, you know, it was just luck. It was just, you know, doing something at the right time in the right place. And it had nothing to do with, you know, and it sucks that that's how it works. Right. You know,
well, I don't know how the job market is right now. I won't. So hopefully when I'm applying for things, there are jobs available.
Oh, Lamont Cranston says he's gotten his last two jobs thanks to headhunters pestering me on LinkedIn. And Kathy Marshall, Microsoft chased me. Yeah, well, I mean, you had an amazing career, though, Kathy. I mean, you worked at Park, right? So, yeah. And I guess a lot of it, you know, you've heard of imposter syndrome, right?
Yes. Are you asking me?
Yeah. You've heard of imposter syndrome.
I they have can't heard of actually answer syndrome. Me. Well, that's I'm just true. Saying. But you were talking to Kathy and you said you've heard they can answer. They can answer in the chat room.
But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I'm looking at this pile of money and I'm going like, oh shit. Am I actually worth this? It's like you know what I'm saying? It's like,
oh yeah, you are.
I'm just saying it's, you know, there's a lot of, I don't know. There's always a lot of self-doubt and everything.
Was I worth what I was making? Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway,
you're worth what you're going to make.
Yeah. So, I am going to be a little extravagant and take you guys out to dinner and, you know, do all that, that kind of stuff.
Can't wait.
But, yeah, I think the most extravagant things that I'm doing is, I requested a cleaning service today to give me a quote on coming in and doing a deep clean before you got here, on our house because, you know, we just haven't done a deep clean and, you know, we vacuum and stuff, but we're not great at cleaning and stuff. So it's like, you know, come in, do all the windows and the mopping and the scrubbing of the toilets and the bathtubs and, you know, do all that shit.
I was just there and like,
yeah.
It wasn't dirty. I mean,
no, it's not dirty now. It's just, you know, one of those, we've never had it, you know, like fully done. Right. I want the couch to get steam clean cause it hasn't been, you know, it's an Ethan Allen couch, but it's, you know, we haven't had it cleaned in a while or ever. So it's like, I would like to get the couch clean, before you get here. I will probably do some yard work before you get here. but you know, those are the extravagant things I'm doing.
Fun ways to spend the next 16 days of your time off of work, yeah. Doing yard work.
No, Mark is not coming, Gary.
Mark is not coming.
Just Adam.
Mark doesn't have any time off of work left. Every year we use all of his vacation. Yeah. So he doesn't have any extra time. And I have nothing but time at the moment.
Oh, I'm off of unlimited PTO. So now I'm back to having, I thought it was generous. I thought it was a pretty good. So they offer 18, PTO days, 9 sick days, and they take 10 holidays. So,
okay.
That's like, yeah. Plus they offer 2 volunteer days. So if you want to volunteer for a local organization, you can take a day off to do that. So you can do 2 of those a year. So, it's one, and you can accrue, right? You can accrue up to 27 days, carry over up to 27 days. So I was like, that's, you know, 27 days, that's five weeks and 2 days. Right. So it's like, yeah, that's not nothing.
We had unlimited days at my place, but I never took over 30.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, so I
took 30.
Oh, I've never taken 30.
Oh yeah. I took 30 every year.
Yeah.
Every year I took 30 because I mean, if they're giving it to me, why am I not going to take it?
No,
well, it's unlimited, but I had, before we went unlimited, I had 30 days. And so when we went to unlimited, I told my boss, I'm going to treat this as the same 30 days that I had before.
Okay.
And she said, fine, that's fine. She's like, I don't care. Do whatever you want to do. As long as you get your work done.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, we have 18 PTO and 9 sick. So that's 27. So there's essentially we have 27 PTO. You can't carry over the sick, but otherwise you can use the sick, whether you're sick or whether somebody else is sick or, is like you're allowed to use your sick day if your partner's sick or you know your child's sick or whatever. And I like the volunteer aspect of it. Like that means that I can go and volunteer. There's a great place right up the road here called Give Kids the World Village, which is they have a whole bunch of volunteer stuff there you can do. And I've always wanted to go do that. So it's like, oh, that would be cool. I could actually go and do that and take days off. But they're on Mac. So I'm getting a MacBook Pro, which I'm not exactly thrilled about.
You'll get used to it. It's just, I mean, you'll use terminal a lot, so it won't matter anyway.
I think. No, I use the desktop. There's a Codex desktop over there too.
Well, yeah.
They're on the Google ecosystem instead of Microsoft. So I'll be using the Google.
But you used to be, people used to say that you were the Google fanboy. So
yeah, I was.
So,
but yeah, and it did great. I get to do some travel. We got offices, you know, we got people in Hong Kong and Miami and California and New Zealand. So I might get to do some traveling.
Nice.
It'll be awesome. And you know, the company's doing really well right now. And so that makes me feel good coming from a company that was literally swirling the drain to go into a place that is actually doing really well is, you know, and people are happy. That's the other thing, right? It's like, I haven't seen happy people in a long time. That's probably more than, Gary asked Daniel, what kind of business is it? They are in, insurance, medical. Well, it's not, they are a healthcare company that is a subsidiary of one of the healthcare companies that does Medicare Part B, I think is, and they have an application for doctors that does diagnostic stuff. And that is the software that my subsidiary wrote. Anyway, but I'm not doing the programming of those. I'm doing internal processes. So I'm essentially dealing with internal workflows and applying technology, AI and automation to those kinds of things. And as I'm going through these interviews and I'm listening to them, it occurs to me that what they really need, because they're very much an AI forward company. So all of their people, you know, make little applications, right? And what they're, you know, when they try to share them with each other, right, they basically just throw them into Slack and, you know, you have to go try to find that application that this guy put in Slack, you know, and, you know, get it on your machine and run it so that you can, you know, benefit from the app that he wrote. And I was just like, oh, what we really need is something like ChatGPT Sites that is on the local network. So it's local to the, you know, it's secure. It's just in the company only environment where you can, so a place where you can host and it has already has a database layer built in. It already has an ID layer and an auth layer and a, you know, security layer and a two different LLMs. So you have the HIPAA compliant LLMs and the regular LLM things available. So basically just plugging all these pieces together and then writing a skill that, you know, for Codex and for Claude that basically says like, hey, when you publish to our internal platform, here's what you have available, right? You can, you can use our Postgres server, and this is how you request a new, you know, basically like make it so that the person writing the application just say, hey, publish this application to the internal system.
Yeah.
And it will know how to do it and it'll take care of that. And, you know, everything, you don't have to worry about making logins or so, that's all baked in. And then on top of that, as these things come in, as we start hosting these things within this system that we've set up, each new application that comes in gets summarized by an agent, right? And then put into keywords and vector databases so that as each new application, like if you go to search for an application about, let's say, expenses or something, you could find all of the applications that relate to expenses, right? So a place to discover, you know, instead of trying to say, where was that? Who was it that had that? Like you could search for the type of application and the keywords and also see other things and then rate them so that there's internal ratings on these things so that, you know, the better ones surface to the top and maybe even a rudimentary kind of social piece in there of chat and whatever. It's like going, this is going to be great. This will be great. We'll have like this whole little internal little ecosystem that, you know, you can not only publish to, but you can also discover other things to use there in an easier way. You know, and you can even have a stupid little assistant that pops up there. It's like, what is it you want to do? And then it's like, hey, these apps will help you with that. Like these apps kind of fit what you're trying to do. Maybe use that as a template and maybe even build that in, right? Where they can pull the app down, make changes to it, whatever. And then, you know, kind of in a mini GitHub kind of a way, submit that back to the original author to see if they want to, you know, incorporate those changes or fork it off to their own product, you know, so that you can, you know, be more collaborative with people. So, I think it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so did you propose this to them during your interview? Oh, okay.
Not yet. I just realized that was, you know, one of the things that they kept recurring back to, they kept asking questions about those kinds of things. Like, you know, we have a lot of people that are making these kind of applications and they, you know, the difficult.
So
go ahead.
Is your job going to be to enable the people at the company to more effectively use AI?
Yes.
Is it to take processes that exist and automate them using AI?
Partly.
Similar to what you were doing
exactly
the past couple of months.
Yep, exactly like what I've been doing.
So both. So you're both going to be an ambassador.
Correct.
But you're also going to be building stuff.
Correct.
Okay. And is there a team of people doing that? Or is it like you or you on a team that's all doing AI enablement? Or are you like in a...
It would be me doing like a POC or whatever and then handing it off to a team to flesh it out, to do the actual stuff. So in other words, I would basically be discovering and, you know, understanding the workflows and then coming up with a solution for it and then doing some tests, you know, some POCs just to make sure that my solution will work. And then that if it's too big, you know, if it's too big for me to do right away, I can just hand that off to a team to do, right? It's like, okay, here's this idea that will help them do this. Yeah, a lot of it is it's heavily over, like other places call it forward deployed engineer. That's the FDE. That's kind of the buzzword right now for that. It's the same thing. It's AI is expensive. However, the majority of automations that exist in a company that you can apply to workflows to help people, you know, be more productive and everything. The majority of those workflows have nothing to do with AI. The majority of those workflows are just simple automations, like transferring a file from this system to that system because there's no, you know, they're in two different vendors or whatever. Like there's just a lot of just mundane automation that could have been done at any time other than the fact that it used to take a dev 2 or 3 days to write one of these things. So
right,
it just wasn't worth the cost, right? It wasn't, you know, you don't have a dev on staff just to occasionally write things, you know, to automate or whatever. But in this new paradigm, right, you can bang these things out in a half hour. Like you can POC it in a half hour. Like you can put in a practical solution rapidly with AI coding. So the price that you have to pay to develop this custom software is approaching nil, right? It's targeting downwards. The thing that really is valuable at this point in time is the domain knowledge and understanding what can be done and how to direct those things to do it. Like they can write code very fast and very good, but only if they're directed well, right? Only if you know there's somebody who can like steer them along the way and go, this is the infrastructure we're going to use, and you know, don't do it this way, do it that way, right? Or to, you know, I want you to do this with that, right? It's like, so it's more of that's, I don't know. I'll know more once I'm there, but yeah, that's the gist of it, right? Is I am there to look at their workflows that they are having problems with, or even that they're not having problems with, look at their workflows and figure out ways to, make those easier and to maybe apply AI, maybe, or maybe not apply AI. What I've found in the past has been that most solutions don't actually require AI. Like even the stuff that I was writing before, you know, at my other company, you know, there were some AI components in it. The majority of it was just plain old automation, just plain old, database application, Chrome extension, whatever, interconnected API, whatever, whatever. But you might use AI to... Oh, no, absolutely, Kathy. Yeah, I will only use AI to develop the code. I don't write code anymore. And I don't think that anyone should. I don't think that people should write code anymore. I have always felt that code is the least important thing about programming. And the numbers back me up on that, by the way. If you Google how much time does the average developer spend actually writing code as opposed to doing other things? What percentage do you think it would be, Adam?
I used to know this because we really spent a lot of time looking at that at my former job because we were trying to give developers more time to code.
Yeah.
But I want to say 20 to 30%, maybe.
What is this weird overlay?
But I could be wrong. That's what I recall.
Is there a weird overlay on the video, like a black bar that I'm...
Oh, it's your name. It's supposed to be your name.
Oh, okay.
It's supposed to be my name.
Yeah, no, I think
it's... But in the light view, it's weird.
Okay, I think it's 23, 24%. Yeah, I think it's about 23 to 24% of a developer's time is actually spent writing code. The majority of a developer's time is spent either designing the system or attending a meeting to understand the system or talking about the system or collaborating, you know, it's like, or having meetings about the system. It's like, there is a part of programming where you have to maintain in your head an abstraction of the system that is being designed and being worked on, right? So you have to, as a dev, you have to have some kind of modeling in your head of how the pieces fit together so that you know the piece that you're working on and how it's going to affect. And the bigger the system is, you'll never have the entire system in your head. You'll only have like your little piece that you're working on and the pieces that it affect, right? And you need to make sure that these interconnected pieces work together. So you have to have this kind of visual model in your head of how these things work. But there's limitations to how much humans can remember. So we can't, we're just bad at those kinds of things, and AI isn't. And that is why AI is so much better at coding right now, is that it is able to keep a lot of those systems, you know, in its head to understand how a change here is going to affect something over there and not fall into the stupid memory overflow, you know, goofy floating integer errors that humans make, because they just don't make those errors. And so... yeah, I will never write code again. I guess is what I'm trying to say. I think I even ranted about the artisan coders a few episodes ago, where it's just kind of like, oh, get over it, Louise. It's like, you can still write code by hand if you want to. Like you can craft the most beautiful code in the world, the most efficient But you know what? It's not going to matter. Where have you been for the last 50 years? That's not the industry. The industry will just throw more horsepower at it. They don't care about how efficient your code is. They only care if it produces a result. And if that result is too slow, their answer historically has just been, let's throw more memory. Let's throw more processing at it. Let's just come up with ways to give them more horsepower as opposed to, you know, artisan coding where you're like, you know, I'm going to make this loop the most efficient little loop ever, right? You know, I've cut it down from 6 milliseconds every time that it happens to 3 milliseconds, you know, kind of a thing. Yeah, I say good riddance. It's like code was holding devs back. Software development is an art. Software development is a something that is an expression, is a creation and an expression of ideas. The code just happened to be the way that you could relate those to people. And now you don't need that layer. And that's great.
I'll say this. It's a lot less tedious to build things now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that was,
you can think about the bigger picture things.
Correct. Which is what you should be doing.
You'd be like, hey, I just want this. And then you can, you know, and then it goes off and does it and it doesn't work. And you go back and forth and I hope.
Oh, good. Kathy Marshall, excellent point, but go ahead. I'll talk about it in a second.
And don't talk me off this ledge, okay? Don't talk me off this ledge. This is a good ledge.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of a better association, but I can't think of it. But I hope that when I'm applying for jobs, the fact that I was an automation engineer, I was an expert QA person, then I was an expert product manager, and now I can show that I have skills using AI to build things, will help me get a good job. I hope.
Okay.
That's my hope. You know, and it doesn't have to be making as much as I was making necessarily, because I'm going to have to go back down a couple of rungs. You know?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that is happening right now in the industry, is that, you know, AI is great, but AI is also expensive. And there's a time that has now come to an end, but there was a time where people were just using AI for everything, running up insane bills, and there was a return on value on it, but it was a very small return on value that really hinged on a lot of things going perfectly. So, yeah, now they've kind of said, it used to be like, oh, we'll just let the devs use more tokens and they'll make better stuff. And it's like, no, that's actually not what happens. And you know what happens is when you give people unlimited tokens, they do really dumb things like, let's make a knowledge base of every document in our SharePoint, and we'll just use, you know, ChatGPT to ingest it.
And it may be dumb for me to do the thing that I'm doing where I'm like, do 10 mock customer interviews, because that uses 10 agents at once. But
you can use a smaller agent for those things. Yeah. So it is cost effective.
But I'm just saying that may be stupid.
But what I'm talking about is if you are building a knowledge base, right, and you're trying to encode data, you don't want to use ChatGPT. ChatGPT is stupidly expensive for that, right? You want an encoding model, which costs thousandths of a penny per million tokens to run, because all it's doing is encoding it. It's vectorizing and encoding the knowledge, right? So for later searching. When you get around to the searching and to the actual answering the questions, yes, you use the more expensive model. But to build the knowledge base, to build the actual rear end that you're going to base your RAG system on, you should not be using frontier models to do your encoding. That's like using a howitzer to, you know, shoot a snake. It's like you just want a little BB gun. You want the smallest, little, cheapest encoding, because all it's doing is encoding, and every single LLM out there can encode. So, you know, we use Amazon Titan to do it for our knowledge base stuff, and it costs, you know, 5/1000th of a cent per million input tokens. So it's super, super efficient. But because people weren't doing that. They were just throwing everything at ChatGPT. That their answer was everything on the highest settings, you know, full bore. And yeah, you'll get good results out of that, but they won't be cost-effective results out of that. So there is an art to how you direct the intelligence and where you put the money, where you do use the expensive models as opposed to where you use much less expensive models to do a lot of the work, and where you don't need models at all. You just need help in designing a little program that will do stuff without AI ever, right? So like when you wrote your podcast app, you used AI to help you write that podcast app, but it doesn't have AI built into it. So that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, you're not applying AI to the workflow. You're using AI to help you design automation. You could have written this automation at any time. There was nothing keeping you from developing QCast 5 years ago other than it would take a lot of time. And it would be like every night spending hours and hours and hours to make very little progress over time. And now you can literally make that progress in a day. And that's what has changed, right? That's what has changed, is that you could have done this stuff at any time, but it was going to be a pain in the ass and take forever. Now you can do it in a very short period of time. So it's more freeing. It's more liberating. You go, oh, okay, I get to do this. I use this analogy. I know that I'm talking a lot, but that's nothing new. I used this analogy in my interview, and I don't remember if I ever brought this up with you, but I tried to, in one of my interviews, I brought up the analogy. I'm like, did you ever watch Star Trek Next Generation? And there'll be something that'll happen in engineering, and either Wesley or Data or somebody runs over to the console and says, you know, I'll write a subroutine that will deflect the tachyon pulse away from the ship. And, you know, someone else is like,
yeah,
you know, I'll develop a sub. And it's like,
writing macros.
Yeah. As a dev, I was always like, that's not how that works. That's not how programming works. That's not how any of this works. But as you know, as I thought about it more recently, We're there. That's what I do. That is what I do. I tell Codex, add this new feature to this application that is, I'm essentially giving it, write a subroutine that deflects tachyon pulses from this thing. That is what I'm doing. I'm vocally telling Codex to, so when they're saying like, I'll write a subroutine that does this, well, all they meant was I'll just direct the machine to do it. So it's like, that's what I'm saying, is like, we're there now. It's like, that is one of those things. It's like, we are at the point where, have you tried the Codex voice mode?
Not for coding.
Yeah, for coding. No. Oh my God, it's amazing for coding. It is amazing.
Because I'm usually, like I said, I'm usually watching TV or doing something where there's something playing in the background.
Yeah, you can.
I'm not usually sitting in silence.
It's amazing. It's like having a conversation with Jarvis. It's crazy. Kathy Marshall says, I wish someone would write a decent search engine using Google's web index. I guess the appeals aren't exhausted yet. You know, I don't know that they, I think the user experience or improving those kinds of things are not on anyone's list right now, just because there's no money in that, right? It's like the only thing they're doing right now is just doing shit that, you know, to make money, right? It's let's exploit this thing, or let's, you know, this is why the number of survey requests in your email have like quintupled over the last year or so, is because now every AI agent that people are selling to businesses are just like going, you need to ask your customers after their visit whether, you know, for them to rate you on Google, you know, right? So it's like every time you do anything now, you get your car wash, you get your hair cut, you know, eat at a restaurant, whatever, you get fucking emails from them going like, make sure you rate your service, make sure you rate your dentist, make sure you your doctor, make sure you rate your, and that's what it's from. It's from these AI, you know, charlatans out there that are basically like, this is how you increase your business, right? Is you just harass your fucking customers. You know, and sadly it works, right? That's why there's still spam, right? Sadly, spam is effective. That's why people do it. Adam, I wanted to talk to you about, hardware. Joey's up for a podcaster award. Jesus Christ. What cans do you have? What are your headphones?
Gosh, let me look. I have Sennheiser HD 280 Pro.
Okay. And how long have you had them?
15 years. Like the whole time I've been podcasting, probably.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, a long time. I've had them for the whole time I've been in.
So these are the original Arkansas. These are the original pair that you did the Adam and Maddie show with. And
I don't know if I was doing the Adam and Maddie show with these, but I wasn't doing the Adam and Maddie show when I moved to Arkansas. I may have bought them when I moved to Arkansas, but that would have been
in
2011. So that's 15 years ago.
Have you ever had to do maintenance on them? Or is there
no.
any?
No, they've been great. I mean, the little cushion on the top finally broke and came off. But other than that, the padding and everything is still fine.
Apparently, I'm much harder on headphones than you because I don't have my original pair of headphones anymore. I think they were Sony MBRs, but I've had this Barodynamics 770DT Studio Pro. I've been using these for probably the last 10 years. But they have a foam, a velour and foam pad instead of pleather, right? And it's a very comfortable foam, and it started to compress, you know, from sweat and stuff. It started to compress, and it was good. They kind of got gross. But I found online is like, oh, I can buy replacement pads, and so I bought replacement ear muffs. Well, the other day I found a little plastic piece on the ground, and I realized that it came from my headphones. So this little joint right above the earpiece, there's a little joint that swivels. And it's made of plastic, but it has cracked because that's an area that moves, right? And there's friction there and stuff. So I was investigating buying new headphones, but then I found out, they sell like all of those. They sell the replacement things. Like you can just unscrew these plastic things that have broken and you can buy another pair for like $8 on the Barodynamics website. And so it's like, when it's like, damn, every single piece of this headphone, of these headphones can be replaced. And I'm just like, damn, I don't even have a good excuse to buy new headphones. It's like I'm being thwarted.
You need to spend a little bit of money. You just job.
But not on something that, I mean, I like the headphones. So all I need to do is replace the plastic pieces.
Think about how long you've had those headphones. If you buy a new pair of headphones, you're going to have them for until you die. I mean, you're going to have headphones forever.
But I could have these until I die too. I just replaced the little plastic pieces on them. I've already replaced the foam. So,
you're that money is wasted on you. you don't spend money.
That's not true.
You shop at the Goodwill store and you are very frugal.
So
you're never going to spend that money.
What are you talking about? You'll be willing it to your descendants. I'm very frugal on a lot of things, but like when it comes to like high end food or whatever, I'm not frugal on that. I'll drop money on a meal.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. You will drop money on a meal.
There are gadgets that I want that I'll drop money on, but it's just right now, it's like the headphones are, you know, I like them. I was just sad that they had cracked, but then I found that, I can just repair them and just keep them. And it's kind of like, I don't know, they're like an old friend. It's my headphones. I just thought it was cool that I can replace, even this band up here can get replaced so every single part of this headphone I can buy a replacement for. So I thought that,
I wonder if they still sell replacement Sennheiser. What are they? They're HD 280 Pro HD. Oh, they have, I can get replacement pads.
Oh, there you go.
From B&H Photo. Yeah. And I can get the pads and the thing that goes up here.
Yeah.
I've still got it somewhere.
Are you familiar with Theo? What's his last
name? No.
on YouTube.
There's a restaurant called Theo's.
No, he's on YouTube. He's a YouTuber. He's a he talks about AI and stuff. He is Theo. He wrote T3 code or whatever, but his YouTube channel is TheoT3.gg. He was going on this rant the other day about how iOS is essentially holding everybody back. Like the fact his problem was, the thing that he was positing, he has this product called T3 Code. He's working on, iPhone integration to it and everything. So he's working on an iPhone app integration for that. But he's unable to publish an app that he wrote to the phone that he owns without having to go through a whole bunch of bullshit with Apple. Like, it has to be compiled on a Mac. It has to be, use their Swift language or whatever, which is a super old language. And it takes forever to compile. It's just this whole like crappy system. And, but what are you going to do? Right. They're the dominant store. They're the only app store that makes money. So, people develop for that, even though it's a shitty experience, and Apple will never give it up because they make their 30% on all of that shit. And, so that's the problem, right? Apple has no desire to fix it because they don't need to fix it. And they don't want to do anything to, and I'm sitting there listening to him whine, and he's basically like, oh, and there's just no, that's it. We're just all fucked. And I'm like, and don't talk to me about Android, because, Google doesn't care. They're just doing what iOS does. So it's like, the only way that Google will add a feature is if it's already in iOS. So, iOS is still holding them back. And it got me to thinking, his hypotenuse.
Yes.
Was that, yes, I know it's hypothesis. His hypothesis was that his Mac is able to run all kinds of software without Apple needing to give him approval. He can write software on his Mac. He can run different software on him. He can, replace anything the operating system does. He can write better tools for his Mac or whatever. There's no restrictions there. But then when he gets to the phone, he's got all these ridiculous restrictions that the computer doesn't have. And that's what got me to thinking. It's like, aren't we really at the point right now where we could just make phone-sized computers? Like, is there any reason that we need mobile phone functionality? And it's like, I would say that the phone part of cell phones is the least important part to people, right? Most people don't really use their phones to make a phone call, right? They use their phones to do texting and app stuff, messaging through different apps and stuff like that. And I'm like, aren't we at the point where we can just get, a phone-sized computer, right? It has been the same, just make, let me put Linux on it. Let me just, it'll just be Linux. I can run, I can write any app
I want to. You can kind of do that with Samsung phones, because Samsung has a desktop environment for Android called Dex.
Yeah.
And you can plug the phone into a laptop and a keyboard.
Yeah.
And you can actually use it like a computer.
Okay.
But I feel like that's the way we're going. Like, eventually phones will be powerful enough.
I think they're already powerful enough.
I mean, maybe they're already powerful enough, but at some point I feel like you'll just have a dock, and you'll come in, you'll sit your phone on a dock, and you'll get the full desktop experience if you want it.
Oh, I know.
You don't think your phone will be your computer for everything?
No, I think the cloud will be your computer for everything. It's like then that way you have your computer everywhere, even on your phone, you have it, right? It's like I think the future is more of hardware is just
like back in the days when there were just dumb terminals and you would go up to a dumb terminal and you would connect to
Yeah, except it's no longer done over a serial port at 9600 baud or less, or 300 baud or whatever. It's now fully rendered across, you know, terabits of yes, it is in one sense going back to the mode where, you know, everything is just a terminal to a central system or something. But at the same time, it's not that, because it's not a monolithic share, you know, mainframe that you're connecting to. It's a computer on the internet. You're just using the internet to connect to another computer, right? It's like the computer that you're connecting to on these things is not a mainframe that, you know, is doling out stuff and central processing. It's its own computer. You're just remoting into it. But the protocols have gotten good enough now that, you know, you don't need, there's not a lot of lag, right? The experience is as if you're doing it, right? It's like, it still feels like it's local. You know what I'm saying? But in that way, then maybe your phone will have your identification on it. So maybe, you know, you sit down at your keyboard, you know, anywhere in the world, you sit down at a keyboard, mouse, and screen, and you set your phone down in front of it. And that's what logs you into your cloud machine, is the fact that your phone is sitting there, and then and your phone can store secure data on it, right? So that it's not going to your cloud account, but down to your phone. I mean, yeah, it could be that. But
I mean, I just feel like your phone will be everything because I mean, and maybe it is all in the cloud, like you're saying, but I'm just saying your phone, you know, now that I have a phone that folds and I don't need a tablet anymore because my phone will fold out. And now they're making tri-fold phones that will get even larger. You can have a full size tablet. You just unfold your phone and you have a full size tablet there, or you fold it back up and it just fits in your pocket like a regular phone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, more and more I'm reading on it, I'm listening to things, I'm watching YouTube, I'm like, everything is on my phone. But you're right. I mean, how often do I use it as a phone? Hardly ever.
Yeah.
And if somebody calls me, I look at my phone like, how dare they call
me? There are products out there, and there's a thing called PinePhone and PinePhone Pro that can run a Linux distribution. So they have a cellular modem in it. You know, they can act like a phone, but they can also run Linux like that can be their operating system. There's Fury Labs FLX1 is available. It's the same thing. It's a computer that has 5G modems and stuff that works with cellular carriers and stuff. But yeah, it's like, these things already exist out there.
Well, I mean, Android is basically a form of Linux. It's a version of Linux.
Yeah, so I would like to point out, yeah, I don't have the same problem that Theo does because I don't have an iPhone, right? I have an Android phone. So to me, all I do is I plug my USB into my, you know, I plug the phone into the USB on my computer into a USB port on my computer. And then I just tell Codex to like update the app, right? It's like I can publish apps. I can write and publish apps to my Android phone just fine. Like I can write them on my computer and immediately publish it to my podcast app that is running on my phone as an Android app. If I wanted to.
The one you use to find the episode that has me talking about driving in Scotland that you will not give Joe the episode number of. Because he's looked all over the place trying to find that episode.
I said the episode number in the thing.
But, yeah.
I said
So you wrote a podcast app that is on your phone that does the things that you said that cuts out certain things? Yeah. And
so it's not on my phone. So, all right. My podcast app, it runs on the server. Right. So any computer on the network can bring up the web app and play the podcast, any of my podcasts from where I last left off. If I was listening to it in the car and I got out and I come into the house, I can bring up the web browser and I can pick it up right from there, stuff. But what I did with the Android app is I wanted an Android app that would survive not being connected. So what the Android app does is that it gets the playlist order and the time codes from the server when it can, and it downloads all the podcasts locally. Right? So when it's on the network and there's new podcasts, it'll load them to the phone. So the app on the phone can play its entire playlist without needing to be connected to the internet or talk to the server or whatever. If it does talk to the server, it can keep synced, but you know, it can survive not being synced. That's what the Android app does, is it doesn't require a constant internet connection to the server. So, but all the processing is done on the server. So all the commercial removal and the, you know, levelating and the removal of, you know, the Cliff Notes stuff that I was doing, all that stuff is done on the server.
Wow. And you're so a feed is being generated.
Yeah.
So is your application, are you giving it feeds and it's downloading automatically and then running them through a process and then creating a new feed? Is that what's happening?
Kind of. Although, you know, on the web, it doesn't need a feed. There's not really an RSS feed because it's own interface. I'm going to share that. Can I share a screen on this?
No.
So I can't.
I was going to add that feature earlier today and I didn't.
So I can't show you, but essentially, no. Like I'll take a podcast here, like All In with Chris Hayes. So yeah, there's an RSS feed for that show. And then there's a settings here for it that allows you to set whether you want to do what kind of process. If you want to do processing, do you want to strip commercials? Do you want to levelate? Those are toggles that you can do on it. And then you can customize the prompt to give to the LLM for the commercial stripping. So things that you can add in, like if there's something specific about this show or they, you know, it misses catching the fact that they talk about shoes. So you add that in, like going, by the way, if they talk about shoes, that's an ad, you know, or something like that. So you can tailor.
And is your,
what?
Is ChatGPT just using FFmpeg to then go and do something to the file?
Yeah.
And create a new file, basically.
Yeah. So what happens is the show gets sent to WhisperX for transcription. ChatGPT, actually, I'm not using ChatGPT. I think I'm using DeepSeek for it. But DeepSeek basically reads the transcript and figures out what the segments of the show are and whether those segments are commercials or whether they're content. And then there's all kinds of, you know, examples of commercials and stuff. And sometimes they can be host read ads and, you know, something like, so it recognizes commercial and it marks those segments, right? So it's just like from this point to this point is a commercial. This point to this point is good content. And then what happens is it sends it the FFmpeg and says, cut out this. So just make a new file using from minute 1 to minute 4, and then from minute 8 to minute 12, you know, so it's just giving it the good content pieces.
Yeah.
So FFmpeg basically creates a new file without the commercials. And then that, if it needs to be levelated, if you have that turned on, then that piece gets levelated into a new file as well. And it replaces the old one. And then there's also a decay that you can do. It looks like for news shows, I have a decay. So if I don't get around to listening to them within a day, they'll drop down on the priority list because news is kind of only good if it's news. And then the remix piece, which is the Cliff Notes version, you can turn that on for it. So I have all the, you know, for each podcast, there's those things. And I also created what's called a network feed. And I do that for that, for Afterthought. So the Afterthought is a single feed that has a bunch of different shows in it. So by identifying as a network feed, it then parses out all the different shows in there and makes those available as a separate feed. So, you add in the network feed, you mark it as a network feed, and then you can break it out into its individual shows and treat them as if they were their own feed.
And all of that is, all of those are RSS feeds that you're internally subscribing to. No. When you go to a web browser, you're just pulling up a web page.
Yeah.
But if you're on your phone,
yeah,
are you subscribing to feeds or are
no.
you just?
No,
Everything is just in the database, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's just making a database call. It's just like, so I'm reading in RSS feeds, right? I'm ingesting and I'm processing RSS feeds and everything, but I don't then use them as output at any point. I'm only ingesting.
But you could.
I could, absolutely.
You could output RSS feeds and then subscribe to it at any RSS reader.
Correct.
And then you just have to sync when you're on network.
Correct. Yeah, I could do that. Yeah. But I wanted, because for me, I wanted to go ahead and build the player because one of the things that I wanted is the central use case for me is I have tinnitus. I listen to podcasts at night in order to distract my brain from hearing the ringing. Those are very specific podcasts that are the same kind of volume level. They're the they're just news podcasts, from MS Now, but they're consistent audio format, right? They're just background noise, right? Things that I can listen to. If I was to play something that was really, really interesting or, one of the other podcasts I listen to during the day, I might not go to bed. I might be listening to the podcast. So I wanted there to be two playlists. Yeah. I didn't want to have two different systems because that's what I used to have to do. I had, one podcast player in my bedroom had, a collection of podcasts and then a different podcast player on my phone had my daily ones or whatever. So I just wanted all that centralized and into one place. So I can do all this different processing, but also have multiple playlists. So it's like, I'm using two, but it can support as many playlists as you want. Right. And they each act independently. So I like the nighttime one doesn't delete episodes when it's done playing, but the active playlist does. Right. So those are settings you can set for the playlist when you create them. So because it's background noise, I don't care if you play old news ones or whatever, because I'm asleep by that point. So you play the newest news ones first, and then you just let it keep playing overnight. And of course it's playing yesterday's shows at some point, but that's at 4 a.m. and you're deep asleep and you don't care. Daniel, do you have it on a timer or do you keep a podcast running all night? I start it when I go to bed and just let it run all night. And then when I wake up in the morning, I stop it. So, I just play it on my phone. So, that's why I have it as an Android app so it can play in the background.
I would prefer to do that as well because I like to have something playing while I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
I prefer to sleep with the TV on.
Yeah.
I don't, but what I normally do is put something on YouTube on my phone.
Yeah.
And then, fall asleep watching it. And eventually I must turn it off because it's always off in the next morning. But yeah, I like having the TV on. I need to think of some other app because when I'm done, air quotes, with this, I'll need something else to do. And you're so good at coming up with ideas that you're passionate about.
So the thing I'm working on right now is a soundboard to give you more ideas about what I think a good soundboard should have, right? So one of the things that sucks the most about a soundboard is how hard it is to make a clip, right? So it's like, if you want to add something to soundboard, that's really, it's tedious, right? You got to record it and then clip it and then, export it and then re-import it on your sound pad or whatever. And so I just wanted to build in a record button that'll let you choose what source you want to record for and everything. And then just put an actual wave editor right up in front of me to let me just clip it. Let me record it and clip it right in the soundboard and it immediately goes to a pad, right? So I can, that way, if there's something playing on YouTube or whatever that I want to clip that. All I have to do is hit record on my soundboard, play the YouTube thing because the way my mixer's set up, it'll be the source, right? Record it and then clip, clean it, add some processing to it, like maybe fading in, fading out, or, trimming the audio or something. But basically just, edit it right there. And then, that's immediately, it's in the library and it's assigned to the pad, right? And then also be able to search for those, right? So that I can type in Adam and it'll pull up all the sound effects that I've tagged as, having to do with Adam, right? Things like that.
Oh, I don't know if you looked, like the soundboard now has search.
Oh, I did not.
Yeah.
It's up here. Yeah, but I've got the size of this soundboard to just be on my page. So what, how does it, so what can I search for? I can,
no,
search.
You can, you, it can, both of the soundboards, the full soundboard and the episode soundboard both have search.
Okay. I was just seeing how you implemented it. So basically what it does is it takes every other button off the page except for the ones that match the search.
Yes. Yep. So okay. As you're typing, it's removing.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I would probably have implemented that as a separate row that narrows down so that you could pick it like the, because you're doing a show and you want to play a sound effect for this joke that's happening or whatever. And you just want to go and grab it and click it, but you don't want to not be able to also click your regular buttons. So in your search case, if I start typing in C for close, I've lost all my other buttons. So if I'm searching and then I stop searching to answer a question because I'm doing it live and then I want to play another sound effect, I have to clear the search to get my board back, right?
So you're saying you'd want it to pop up as an extra, like either like a modal or something where a button would pop up that you would click, or
yeah, I would want it to basically give me a
separate row.
No, just row. Like a drop down, like, you know, a searchable drop. Like you start and it basically just like Google, right? It'll just show you the, if there's five choices, like the top five choices.
But it would be buttons.
Well, or I don't care if it's a button or a line, but the point is if you click on it, it plays it. Because if you're searching, you're just grabbing, you know, you're going to have your most commonly used noises here. You're only gonna be searching for something that you rarely use, like a helicopter noise or a newscopter noise or where was that stupid skull music, or where's the news music, you know, the news stinger that we don't always use, stuff like that. Because things that are, you know, things that are common, right? 3, 2, 1. Those are always on my soundboard, right? They're already there. So I'd only be searching for, you know, things that I don't use often. It's very loud. Yeah. But I'm just like, my point was I was just going to make the little soundboard thing to give you an idea of what it is that I'm talking about. It's very easy to use. Yours right now is very easy to use, but it also presupposes that you have the sound clip already made and everything. And a lot of times you just want to do that 10 minutes before the show. You've got the podcast. It'd be great if you could just scrub to the area of the podcast, click on play, click on record.
Well, is there a chance for you to do a pull request and then just do, well, not a pull request, but fork it or something? And then
possibly, yeah.
Just give me back something, or
I was just going to, you know, play with it.
Okay. That's fine.
I'll give you something back. Like I was actually, I was doing mine as a .NET desktop app, but that's fine. That was just cause I wanted to test this library for .NET thing, but I can do it as a React thing. That's fine.
Well, whatever you were going to do is fine. I don't care. Yeah. I'll look at whatever.
Anyway, but I think we're done.
Okay.
I want to stress that I am happy to test this. I mean, this is done fine for the after show. What I would like is just the ability for our stackable view to be, you know, so that I can make it full height.
No, I got it. I got it.
Cause I like to line.
I don't know why the pop out view is not working well.
Yeah.
But we didn't test that the other day, so I didn't know there was a problem.
But I'm saying I am available if you want to test that during the week. I, as it turns out, Adam, have nowhere to be. So,
But I'll just call out to the chat room. We've been using QCast to communicate with each other for like the past hour.
What is the QCast app that's floating there? What does that do?
Where? What?
In Discord. There's a QCast app that's right above.
Oh, it'll, they can, so I should have put share screen in there because I can't show anything, but they can, like, if you go to social bots.
Yeah.
On the left.
Yeah.
And then at the top, you go to, we'll go to live inbox.
What?
at the top, go to live inbox.
What do you mean top? When I click on social bots, it says no topics are monitoring chat yet.
Oh.
Configure topics and social automations, then matching chat messages will appear here during the show.
Oh, I haven't created. Oh, we can't do it. But okay. There's a, it's on my local machine. But you add a destination, which is like Discord. And then I could do it real quick. Are you in a hurry?
No, I'm not in a hurry. Lamont. No, I thought that too, but Adams is spelled C-U-E cast, like as in,
I don't know if that name is going to stick. Yeah. The domain's not even available, but that's what I'm using.
But when he said Qcast, he didn't mean Q, the letter Q cast. It was C-U-E cast.
But I don't know. I don't know if I like that name. I don't know. I probably won't use that. I'll probably use something else.
It was the Qcast connection, and they didn't want to change their name, right? When they moved down here, they still wanted to call it Qcast. But the connection part was because they were in Connecticut. And then, so I don't know whatever it got renamed to, I forget. It's crazy because I just recently played a D&D game with Michael. So they live here in Orlando. Well, Michael just had a heart attack, and but he's doing better now.
The problem is I don't remember what my Discord credential. I don't know how to find the Discord credential. Is it developers.discord.com?
That sounds right, but ChatGPT would know before I would.
Developer portal.
Developer.
Let's see. Go to applications, Qcast, application ID. So basically, I can add a connection. So I'm going to add one right now. I'm going to add a Discord bot. I'm going to name it Qcast bot. And I'm going to give it I've created an application in Discord. So okay. I'm giving it the application ID, and then I've got to give it the token. And I don't know if I can token. How do I get the token? Token.
The first Pride 48 show that Kathy Marshall found was Big Fatty. Yeah, I remember the early, early days of podcasting with Wanda Wisdom and even then Leo Laporte had taken his radio show and put it out as an RSS feed. So that was, you know, one of the ones I would listen to. And yeah, I used to listen to a bunch of things. It was a long time before I did one. I was a listener long before I did one.
So hopefully now I can do this. So like if I go to the inbox,
yeah,
and I add a topic. Yeah. So like I'm giving mine the name questions, and then I'm setting it to the Pride 48 live chat. And then I'm going in and adding a text filter, and I'm going to say hashtag question.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to create the topic. Now, anytime someone in the chat room puts hashtag question.
Yeah.
In their message, if you go back to the episode and you click on the social bots.
Yeah.
You have a tab now for each hashtag. So you should see a tab over there on the left that says questions.
No. No? I see no topics are monitoring chat yet.
Oh, maybe that's not shared between hosts.
Oh, so okay. Wait, I went back and now I see it. It says
okay.
questions, but it says zero captured, even though I just
typed. So now if I go in and type,
but I just did. I went in and typed typed in hashtag question.
Well, mine came up. I don't know why yours didn't. You see it?
Yeah. It says this is a test.
So anyway, we can give hashtags. I don't know why that didn't work, but maybe you did
somebody,
it before.
Can somebody try typing in a hashtag question and something and see if it comes up here? Since it clearly didn't work for me.
And then you can...
Wait, now that one worked. Why is that one worked? Did I do it too soon?
You must have done it too soon or something.
Okay, yeah, that seems cool.
So you can do that, and we can add as many of those as we want, if we ever want to do that. And then the other thing is you can schedule messages for the Discord channel. So
would I know that they came in if I had the soundboard up? Like, do I get a toast message that there was one of the topics?
Not currently, but that can be arranged.
I'm just saying my normal view is always going to be the soundboard. So true. It's like, I don't want to go, you know, I can go over to the social bots if there's something for me to see, but I don't.
What about a little icon over the social bots button that has a number?
Yeah, that'll work.
Like 2 or 3 or something like that. And it shows you there are new messages.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Anyway, and then the other thing we can schedule, like I said, we can schedule. So you can schedule it to do like recurring. You can schedule to do when you hit record.
Yeah.
You can have a certain thing message out. My goal is to add more. It's Discord right now, but my goal is to add X and Blue Sky and, you know, other places. So yeah. you can bring in stuff from other social networks. All right. I'm losing the crowd. I'm losing the audience. So
I've had a very
crazy
long week. Day, very long, you know, but hey, it's done. It's still so
it's
weird.
It's done.
It's still so quiet in here because usually that laptop is running and huffing and puffing. And it's just like, it's super quiet, man.
Yeah.
Occasionally now I hear the Linux server kick in and I'm just like going, oh, I couldn't hear it before because of the fucking laptop. But you know, gotta do some cleaning and stuff before you get here. So you don't think that we're horrible people. I wanted to answer some questions in the chat room. Eric the Southern Boy did have his own podcast. It was called The Something Life of a Country Boy.
The Gay Life of a Country Boy?
Gay Life of a Country Boy. It was, he actually did it on one of the streaming weekends. I think one of our first streaming weekends he did it. Pop Trash Radio, I remember them. They also, I think, did a Pride 48?
Might have.
Yeah. And do we know what happened to Davey and Kendra? No, I don't. Those are
I don't
Pop,
know them.
They're from Pop Trash Radio. No, I do not know what happened to them.
They died.
Matt Burlingame probably does. I think he was the one that was close because I think they were all part of the Rainbow Pod Squad.
Oh. I don't know these competing networks.
Well, that was, you know, the Rainbow, but that was Madge and that whole thing. Yeah, there you go. Confessions of a Southern Boy in Yankee Land. Yeah, that was probably it. All right. Lamont Cranston, Kathy Marshall, thank you so much for sticking with us to the end.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. And
Tony, thanks for listening to the end.
That's right. Tony, thanks for listening to the end. And Brian, thanks for listening to the end and, you know, everybody else.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's still, you know, it's still kind of, I don't think hasn't really sunk in just the change, right? It's just like to just literally double your salary is crazy. So, yeah. Anyway, good night, chat room. I'm going to
good night chat room. Good night stream.
There, I think I have to do a stop first. Let me do a stop. Stop, Craig.